previously on Geth in the Mecha. The Uprising arc has concluded. The new challenge at hand is mostly the loose ends of Season 2, the Clash of the Titans arc. Shiganshina is a place that needs no sort of introduction. We've seen Shiganshina loads of times in the opening arcs. It's the entire idea or concept of heading into an inevitability or heading into the darkness, if you will. You are listening to episode 17 of Gen the Mecha, the anime and comic book podcast where we take things one step further. I analyze everything from arcs to OPs to episodes in my quest to make sense of all of it. In today's episode, we are discussing the Return to Shiganshina arc of Attack on Titan. If you have been keeping up with the podcast, you would know that I've been discussing Attack on Titan for quite a while now. I've spoken about it in two other episodes, episode 5 and episode 12, if I believe. So I've rinsed this out quite a lot, but in today's episode, we are discussing the arc as a whole, and after that, we'll be done with the Return to Shiganshina arc. This is going to be a bit more of a general overview, with maybe a few minor spoilers, but nothing too large, so don't feel too alarmed by that. So that's what we'll be going through today. If you enjoy the show, please give it a lovely review, whether that's on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, to tell me how much you like the show. And without further ado, here is the episode for this week. That is episode 17 of Get in the Mecha, the Return to Shiganshina arc. Here we are back again discussing the Return to Shiganshina arc. It's been quite a while. We've spoken about it quite a lot, to be fair, so I'm going to just briefly say what I'm going to be covering. I think I'm going to go through a bit through the tactical element that Return to Shiganshina brings back to the show, a bit about the decisions that have to be made, a few other things, and then the ending is something I want to touch on because I've spoken about the OP. And when I say ending, I don't mean the ED. If anything, I mean the actual ending to this season and this arc. So I want to discuss that. And that will be it basically for this episode. So as I said, the first thing is tactics. Honestly, the Return to Shiganshina arc is really good because it brings back the tactical element that Attack on Titan, I think, is known for. I always thought that Attack on Titan was a military anime, and it has stuck to that quite a lot in previous seasons, particularly the first season, and I'll tell you a bit why. The first season is very regimental. It discusses a lot to do with the military. It is basically shoehorned all around this element of the military. If we take the beginning of the show, of which we get this development of Eren Yeager being more assimilated within the military even. The Battle of the Trost District is an entire military battle. The Female Titan arc is kind of military. It feels a bit more sort of skewed because it's with the scouts for the first time. And then things kind of change after that with Clash of the Titans, etc. But the military element is something that I think is really important and ingrained within Attack on Titan. And I think that part kind of fades out. You kind of feel, well, I feel that sometimes when it came to the scouts and all of that, when the tactics weren't really there, it didn't really feel military. It kind of just felt as if there were a bunch of people trying to take down some titans. The Return to Shiganshina arc brings that very much back. Discussing tactics openly, talking a lot about how we're going to deal with situations. So when it comes to the arc, we have the two sides of the war. That is very much discussed on how they'll try to deal with that and overcome it. Obviously, that doesn't particularly go to plan, as all things go in any anime. Things don't really go to plan, but it's very nice to see how things are discussed and strategized. The whole thing on strategy is kind of interwoven throughout the series, so even, I believe it's in one of the first episodes, we get almost a map of Shiganshina and where the Titans are positioned and how they'll navigate across how they intend to try and navigate across the land in order to take down these titans and take back Walmaria. Again, when we talk about strategy, the thing is it never goes to plan, and that kind of walks into my sub-point on how the deterioration of strategy is quite important. This gets in slightly with Erwin's speech, but I think it's quite valuable that we see a slow breakdown of tactics from something that seemed very much planned and ready from the very beginning. So at the beginning of the arc, if you take Armin's plan to try and find where Bertolt and Reiner are hiding using the tactic of banging on the walls, that is very much strategy, and it's almost intentional strategy. And then we go back to Armin later in the arc, and we see him doing things that he would probably never ever do from a tactical standpoint, because when it comes to this show, and also when it comes to this arc, strategy or strategy in the military isn't always a necessity when things are in dire consequences, or when we're in a dire time, we have to resort to dire measures or extreme measures. That is compensated for within this arc, which I really enjoy. The same very much applies to Erwin and Erwin's speech, which we discussed a lot last episode or two episodes ago. Erwin's speech kind of indicated that even with all the military stuff and everything present, your life would mean nothing effectively if you didn't work with your comrades or the people alongside you. So resorting to those desperate measures is almost an inevitability, which, as we see within this part of the show, is done very much or all the time. The slow deterioration of tactics isn't only a thing that we can apply to the scouts and the army and the military, but it's also something we can apply to the Titans. As things become more desperate, things get sort of more panicky among the Titan side. So Zeke goes absolutely crazy when Levi comes and destroys all his Titans on the other side, or to the side of him. That calls for desperate measures, and that calls for crazy things to go on. That chaos is created very well by Iyasama. When things don't go to plan, things get really wild, but also really interesting. I don't think a show would be very interesting if everything went to plan. Obviously, when things don't go to plan, it's how you create that chaos. That chaos is, again, crafted very well by Iyasama by making things almost feel so volatile, and you don't really know what's going to happen when things don't go to plan. Erwin's charge being a really good example of that. To what extent are they going to go when things get hectic? Iyasama makes some really tough calls when it comes to that. Deciding to make an entire, or almost an entire part of our team or army sacrifice themselves is a very big deal. But it's also done very well because of that build-up. So he doesn't particularly just say, you know, let's just cut them out this story because things aren't going to plan. It's why it's not going to go to plan. It's backed up by logic. So the speech backs up why they go for the charge and then why X happens. It kind of feels like a game of 4D chess. This is something I was thinking about before. It kind of feels a bit like a game of 4D chess. Almost both sides have to really think about what each side is going to do. They compensate for that in their sort of attack or defense plans. But when things don't go to plan or something that they didn't really prepare for happens, how they deal with it is really crucial in order to gain leverage over their opponent. That, in comparison to other arcs, I would say is very much prominent. If I just quickly go back to the Uprising arc, that is something that I don't think was really present. This thing of thinking forward, it very much felt stuck in what do we do now? And doing now isn't particularly a bad thing. In the now is very important in this show. As you know, action is very much based on in the now. What happens now influences what happens in the future. But thinking about the future also influences what happens in the now. The Uprising arc, I don't feel like considers that. Nor does it really consider the stuff to do with the military and the tactical element. One can argue that that tactical element is still there, as the military does take on this sort of counter-revolutionary position in taking down this new side of the army, or not really new side, but one of which is guided by the royals to sort of tamper with things. I'm not the biggest fan of the Uprising arc, I'll be honest, But that is something that I think was lost. The tactics that came with Attack on Titan didn't really feel there. It was very much about politics, and politics isn't a bad thing in this show. I do think they handled the politics and sort of social structure to a decent extent. I do like that part of Yasama's writing and sort of world building, if you want to call it that. But I also think it's important that we don't forget where this story came from. That story came from one that was to do with a boy who wants to become part of the military as a result of being attacked by or being victim to one of the greatest attacks in sort of their history. So it's nice that the Return to Shiganshina arc brings that back. If we continue on this road or wave of tactics, it is almost very essential here that tactics are considered. The military have to, or the scouts, if I'm more specific, I say military a lot when it comes to this show. When it comes to the scouts, they have to manage resources very carefully, as that, again, has influence on the future of the battle. If I bring in more examples here, the lightning spears show that. We have to manage our resources to turn the tide of this battle, but that also brings an element of risk if we, again, take lightning spears. That brings an element of risk because, obviously, they're dangerous, so how do we win a battle outright or win a battle without losing as many men as possible? That is, I think, the basis of it. But also, how do we maintain an advantage, or how do we gain an advantage with what we have available? Obviously, these are beings which are terribly strong. So Bertold, who's massive, Reiner, which is very fast and strong, and the Beast Titan, which is kind of the brains of the operation. How do we use what we have to win this battle? That is something, resource management is something that is crucial in the Return to Shiganshina, which I also very much like. It just adds another dimension to everything and just adds to the difficulty that is this battle, as it is quite a struggle. If we consider how important this part of the show is, maintaining an advantage and winning this sort of uphill battle or struggle is crucial, vital. So resource management is only part of the plan, but a very important part of the plan in winning against the Titans and getting back more Maria. I will come back to some other things, mostly decisions and the ending, later on in the episode, but for now, let's go to the Link the VA segment for this week. If you are new here, Link the VA is quite simple. What I do is I go into my anime list, go to the show or like the seasonal arc of which we're talking about this time, Attack on Titan 3rd Season Part 2, and look at one of the roles, find one of the voice actors for that role, and then kind of just have fun with it and see who else they play. The roles which we've looked at before are Erwin and Marco. Two really good roles, actually, in terms of the other roles that the voice actors play. This time, I think I'm going to take a stab at Armin, just because I was speaking about him before and the whole thing to the tactics. Armin is linked to all the stuff to the tactics, so that's who I'm going to go through today. The voice actor which we'll be speaking about today is Marina Ino. She plays Armin and a large amount of roles when it comes to anime voice acting. There are about three roles which I found today. This one is quite a decent Link the VA, I'll be honest. Maybe not as good as last week's, but a very good one still. The first role for today's Link the VA is Nana from Darling in the Franxx. I usually say this a lot on the podcast, but I don't really know how to feel about this one. Nana's kind of the same. On the Mal page, there's like nothing written for her, which is kind of upsetting. She's kind of like the bureaucratic mum. Okay, that's a bad way of explaining it. She's kind of like the legal quote-unquote mum of the pilots, in terms of she kind of has to tell them what to do and all of that in regards to missions and all. I don't really know how to feel about her. She's okay. I don't remember much from her, but I am getting some decent memories from Darling in the Franxx, to be fair. On the topic of Franxx, I don't think Franxx is going away anytime soon. If anything, I think it might be like one of the classics of maybe these past few years. I don't particularly mean classic in a good way. Do I mean it in a bad way? Either not really, but Franxx isn't something I'm just going to forget magically overnight. It's kind of stuck with me in a bad way. But I did have a bit of fun out of it. Nana, maybe not so memorable, but it did give me some good memories about the series, so credit for that. Second role, which I want to go through, is Momo from BNHA, Boku no Hero Academia, My Hero Academia. Momo's voice is alright. Again, I'm kind of saying things are average here. It's not saying like the talent behind the voice isn't good. No, that's not the case. It's just, do I remember Momo because of her voice? No. Do I remember Momo because of the way she synthesizes materials from her chest? Yes. I think that's all I have to say for that one. Momo's an interesting character though. I haven't really been seeing her much in the overall arc from what I've read of it, because I'm probably going to read or watch, sorry, the anime adaptation of the overall arc a bit later than everyone else, as I got things to do, but, and I obviously had the podcast to make, but hopefully she has some role maybe in this arc or the next one. From what I've read, again, in the overall arc, I don't really see her that much. She's kind of faded out from, I believe, season 3 and 2, when she was actually quite prominent, when she was like with Shoto or Todoroki and doing all that stuff. Hopefully I see more of her and hear more of that voice, and then I can come to a greater sort of conclusion. Final role, this one I actually really like. I actually have something to say about this one. The final voice is Kyoko from Sangatsu no Leon. Kyoko's character and voice is kind of unsettling. It has a cocky vibe to it, but it's also quite dark as well. Probably if you've watched the series, you'd know that there's quite a lot of underlying pain behind that. Kyoko, I am really happy about when it comes to the voice. If we compare that to Armin, I think Armin would be someone that's definitely scared of a character like Kyoko, to be honest. The two characters definitely don't mix. I don't think they would ever really meet. But Armin kind of has this sort of scared optimism to his voice. And it's like, ah, let's go and try and save the world. We can see the ocean, And then Kyoko would probably just be like, no, just no. It's a weird contrast, but I definitely do like Kyoko. And now I'm getting good memories from Sangatsu no Leon to kind of neutralize those Darling in the Franxx feelings. Speaking of Sangatsu no Leon, still no third season. To be fair, Kyoko didn't really have much of a role in the second season. I haven't really read ahead in the manga yet, which I don't know why. I've watched Sangatsu no Leon quite a while ago. I should have read ahead in the manga because I love that show to death. Hopefully that returns sometime soon. If we see Irregular Magikai getting a second season and Sekikuzo getting a second season, or not even a second season, just some more content, I have faith in Sangatsu no Leon to get third as well. Even Kaguya-sama and Shield Hero got two more seasons. Like, holla, Shield Hero got two more seasons. Kaguya got one, but I'm really happy about Kaguya getting another season. Sangatsu is hopefully on the list. Hopefully we can get one. I don't know when, but if it happens, it happens. I'll be really happy about that. I think that's going to do it for Link the VA. A kind of a mix of voices this time. Not particularly ones that I have gushes or loads to say about. But obviously credit to Marina Inuo for an amazing voice and being an amazing voice talent. And with that, let's get back to the show. Decisions, decisions, decisions. The essence of this arc. Decisions are quite important because the Return to Shiganshina arc is a part of the show where the decisions made now are ones which are leading all up to the endgame. In fact, it's probably the setup for the endgame of the show. Setting up the 9, the choice to even go for the 9, the choice to find and seek out the basement, the decision of who do we save? Do we save someone like Armin? Do we save Erwin? Those decisions are the crucial ones which will determine how we go forward in the rest of the show. I said this before in, I think it was episode 5, if not episode 12. This part of the show feels like the beginning of the end, or if anything, it's the middle, because it determines, or it looks like it will be trying to determine how the rest of the show flows. From what I understand of the final arc, which is going crazy at the moment, everything seems to be happening in there. There seems to be like this meme in the OT community where everyone sort of shook for the next chapter to come out because something crazy happens every chapter. The Return to Shiganshina arc almost sets up for that. And as I said earlier in today's episode, things don't always go to plan, as the final arc has proven. But also things need to be set up somehow, and there are sort of plans of action to go forward from this part of the show. I also said in a previous episode that this is kind of like a conclusive arc. It ends some of the looming questions or conflicts which were present earlier. So the conflict between Bertolt and Reiner is shut down and completed. This is round two. This is the final round, if anything, to wrap some things up. Not particularly round two or the final round with everybody, but with some of the more crucial questions, so the basement and the key and stuff to the coordinates, Bertolt, Reiner, as I said, those are wrapped up here and now, because obviously the main focus is going to be the nine and everything else. So structurally, I do get some good vibes from The Return to Shiganshina because it does wrap some things up. It doesn't feel like find out next time on Attack on Titan. If anything, it feels like thank you for watching Attack on Titan. Here is the next part where we're moving on to do this, if you kind of get what I'm saying there. It doesn't really feel like a cliffhangery arc as the others did. If we take first season or the female Titan arc as the primary example, it took about how many years to get the second season rolling after that, with the epic cliffhanger of just Titan looking through the wall. That, I feel, is something that they've kind of left behind in this arc. It's a bit more of a mature approach, I think. Although cliffhangers, don't get me wrong, I don't think cliffhangers are a bad thing. But for this arc, it's very nice that they don't, you know, leave so many looming questions. Some things are obviously left for later, but that is something that's inevitable in any show. This isn't something that they intended to do with everything, though, which I really appreciate. Some things are honestly, the truth is laid out right in front of you for most of it. Now it's kind of, let's move on to the next chapter, which are the two final arcs, the Marley arc and obviously the final arc. This sets up nice for an endgame, as the endgame is very much sectioned off from the rest of the show. So although the rest of the show is very important for everything else, if we take episode 5 in the podcast where I spoke about sort of transferring value, that sort of value transference is still meaningful in the Marley and final arc as well as this one. But it also means that some of the things that we've spoken about before, or all the sort of mess from the other arcs, can kind of be forgotten about, as this is a separate journey, as everything that has led up to that, as this is sort of like a separate journey, so everything that happened before that can be safely cordoned off and put into the chest to rest. That rhymed somehow. It's kind of put into the box to rest. Let's get on with the other two arcs and finish this by collecting the nine, etc. The whole thing on moving on is almost meant to be, or it's very much intentional within Isayama's writing. The imagery to do with the devil and we must become the devil kind of marks a turning point, rather than, you know, let's just keep going as we are. We have to take up a different role. We have to almost become assimilated with the Titans, rather than just kill them off, as that was the goal at one point. The goalpost has shifted a bit. It's now collect the Titans, seek them out rather than exterminate them. The perspective of the army and everybody else has changed now. It's sort of altered to something quite nuanced. The nuance is small, but it's one that is very necessary. This leads me to a bit more of a smooth point. The other one was kind of rough. This arc adds sort of a temporal layer to the show. I mean that in a few ways. So in terms of time, there's sort of an element of time that is brought into this, as time is now very much important as opposed to what happens in the now, and that's all that matters. Yes, you can argue that for previous seasons of the show. So at the beginning with the fall, that is kind of rooted within time, but then it's sort of left behind. The Return to Shiganshina arc brings sort of two elements of time which I want to speak about. The first one is the stuff to do with Marley and Grisha and the sort of Eldian uprising sort of thing that goes on within the show. That element of time brings context for the rest of it. The Eldia Restorationists bring sort of an element of heritage and context to what the scouts are doing when it comes to not only moving on when it comes to the Marley arc, but when it comes to the basement and everything else which has happened up to now. The historical element, if anything, provides almost a justification for the actions of those in the scouts, and also those related to Grisha, etc., as a part of the Eldia Restorationists. That's sort of the side point, I think, when it comes to time. The second point on time, I think, is a bit more substantial. It's the way that this sort of season as a whole, so if we take season 3 of Attack on Titan, is structured. One thing that I really like, this is also kind of from an artistic standpoint, one thing that I really like is how the Return to Shiganshina and Uprising arc together are structured, in the way that the Return to Shiganshina arc, or season 3 part 2, ends where the Uprising arc begins. It's sort of like, here's a summary of everything that happened, and that is why we're going forward to defeat the Nine. That even includes the history and everything of the Eldia Restorationists within that. That sort of, that look on Eren's face is defined by everything that happened within that in the past up to now. Everything has come together for this one moment. It's cordoned off for that sort of that ending. And then we move forward and do something else, which is obviously collecting the Nine, the Mali arc, the final arc, and everything else which is going on. I do like that very much. It feels very smooth, to be fair. Also, the way the ending is as a whole is very smooth. So the decisions sort of run out and freedom feels really free. That sounds so abstract. Freedom feels like freedom when you build up for so long when it comes to not being free. It took 3 seasons to get here, to finally be free of these walls. It feels so cool and better to finally experience that. And the way it was executed was beautiful when it came to visually how the water looked and how the environment looked. It was set up really nicely and was really well shot. Also, when it came to the basement scene, I think it was episode 7. I think that is probably one of my favorite episodes of the show. Besides the episode where Levi kicks the heck out of Eren, that will remain probably my favorite episode ever. It was beautifully done with like the overhead shots and the way that they sort of opened the lid of that chest and then found the book and everything like that. Very smooth and very well done. I have to give credit over there. The ending of this sort of season and arc was very well done, but it, as I said before, has a good amount of resonance and smoothness to it by ending where it began. Also, just the build-up of everything. So deciding now, here's the time to use all these setups which we've decided to milk out for 3 seasons. I use milk out, sort of, I'm oversimplifying when I use the term milking out. Deciding to build up all this stuff with the key and the basement and freedom works very well, as you know, if someone's not free for like 3 seasons, it's taken a very long time, and deciding to be free now feels even better than if you're free 10 episodes in. And it's with all of this, all these things that I've waffled over, that I think the show was really well done and really smooth in how it was done. I've rambled enough, so let's go to the In The Moment segment, where I'll just talk about what I've been watching and reading recently. And then we'll just go to some closing thoughts. So here is the In The Moment segment for this week. This week has been a cool one. It's been a very harem-centric week for me, as I'm finally taking the plunge into seasonal anime. If anything, let's make this segment a bit dedicated to what I'm watching this season. I don't really think for now I'm going to be doing those entire episodes based on what I'm watching this season, as everybody does those. It's usually along the same lines as most people, but I'll just do it in this segment anyway. So what I'm watching this season, I am watching Valak's Love, Bakuben Season 2, No Guns Life, I'm catching up with Fire Force, I'm also catching up with Vinland Saga, I'm on episode 7 at the moment. And that's about it, if I remember. I think that's about everything. Oh yeah, and Assassin's Pride. Assassin's Pride is something I'm going to speak about a bit now. In terms of harem though, harem has been very centric this year for me, and also this season. Valak's Love is probably the dumbest but funniest harem I've ever seen. I'm not even going to go into the synopsis, as I don't even know if I'm able to explain it on the show quick enough. But it's amazingly stupid and funny. You should check it out. It's like rated under 6 from Mal. Highly, highly recommend. Also, Bakuben Season 2, very happy that show's returning. Really enjoyed it last season as well. It's been a really good year for harem anime overall, I think. Hensuki is also a harem I just finished. I knew the results from basically the beginning, but that extra episode at the end tricked me out of it a bit. Also recommend for you harem fans. There's a lot of harem this year, and definitely take your pick on whichever ones you like, as there is a lot of content there. You got Quince, Bokuben Hensuki, Valak's Love, two seasons of Bokuben even, and Quince's second season coming out at the beginning of next year. So you got loads to choose from. Pick your poison. And now to Assassin's Pride. Assassin's Pride, it's not really the show that I'm really interested in. It's the OP. I think I've found my favorite OP this year. I was going on saying that Mob Psycho 102's OP was going to be my favorite of this year. I spoke too soon. Assassin's Pride is this mix of artcore and EDM and electronic music. It looks stunning in terms of its OP. It sounds amazing. I've never heard an OP like that before. That's what I should be saying. Hopefully, although I don't really take this as sort of self-validation or validation for my tastes, but if this does get nominated for the CR Anime Award for Best OP of the Year, I hope that people vote for it. If I can vote, I will definitely be advocating for that OP to win because it is amazing. I don't think there's anything I can personally say that beats it this year. The show itself is okay. Visually, it's doing a lot better than I thought it was going to do. It's not like amazing Sakuga, but it is pretty good for what I've seen so far. I watched two episodes. I decided to watch one of them on my TV, as that's something I've been doing recently. Just HDMI my laptop in and watch anime from there. It's actually a really good experience. And yeah, that's what I've been doing when it comes to Assassin's Pride. As I said before, it's an okay show. Is it 10 out of 10 already? No, but am I having a bit of fun? Yeah, I am for sure. It has some potential. Hopefully it picks up on that. A lot of manga readers actually exist for that show as the adaptation. A lot of people have read the adaptation and they're saying good things or decent things about it, so I'm willing to see how it progresses. There are quite a few things I want to talk about. I think I'll sort of summarize it in like two things that I want to speak about in this week's Indie Moment. Another thing is, okay, story time. Tiny story time even. There's this manga that is always recommended to me on my Mao page. I don't know if it's just how the algorithm is or it just systematically recommends the same things, but there's this show or this manga called Wave Listen to Me that is always on that manga list of like manga store when it comes to my anime list. It's always there. And I just found out recently, again, I'm like 2 weeks ahead of you guys, so you're probably like, bro, you should have already seen that. I'm just finding out that this very manga that's always been recommended to me, I've been on Mao for a decent amount of time. Not as long as you probably think. Probably a bit over a year. So that's not very much, but probably a bit over a year. And it's now being adapted into an anime. That's quite cool, to be fair. It's nice seeing that anime or manga that you see almost every day are actually going into something and being acknowledged. Wave Listen to Me is kind of like a radio show. I think the person breaks up with someone and then they have their own radio show, kind of trying to call them out, something like that. I'm not too sure. It sounds quite interesting to read and watch. I will be taking interest in it. I'll probably watch it. I think it comes out in the spring season, if not the winter season of next year. Again, I haven't fact checked all of this. I will check it out. Hopefully it's good enough. I think as a podcaster, I have a moral obligation to watch that show. So that's what I'll be doing next season for sure, or whenever it comes out. Final thing that I wanted to say in regards to seasonal anime and just this segment in general is that I've started watching this new anime, again, seasonal from the fall season, called No Gun's Life. It hasn't received massive amounts of recognition from what I've heard so far. It's made by Madhouse. It looks pretty good. I'm quite impressed. It has a Golden Wind sort of JoJo's look to it, but also looks, it gives me a Cowboy Bebop vibe. So think Bebop plus Boogie Pop World Wadawanai, just because of Madhouse and sort of the dark look to it, plus JoJo's Golden Wind. But obviously Golden Wind's rather bright, so if we take away the color of Golden Wind and just the character design, that is kind of what I get from this show. I've watched the first two episodes. I'm quite impressed. It's going quite well. Hopefully it goes all the way and is really enjoyable because I'm liking it. I've been looking for a show that doesn't feel sort of too serious. It is more on the serious side from what I've seen, but it also has a bit of like a blasé feel to it. It gives me sort of that episodic vibe from Bebop. At the moment, it is more story-based, but it has this vibe like Bebop in terms of something happens in one episode and then you can sort of happily forget about it unless they decide to obviously bring it back, because that does happen occasionally. Or if it's one of the ongoing themes within the show. But often with Cowboy Bebop, you watch one episode and then forget about it, unless it's like a two-parter or something like that. I have been enjoying this season actually quite a bit. I know next year I'll probably be watching a lot less, so I might as well stockpile on things now and then maybe review them for next year, although it will be a bit late. But why not? Anime is anime, so I will probably be reviewing those things another time, so I might as well watch a good amount now. Anyway, that is going to do it for the In The Moment segment, and as you know, we sell out a bit after every time we talk about In The Moment, so if you do enjoy this episode, or if you did enjoy this episode, or any other episode even, feel free to leave a review and tell me what you think. It would be lovely if you leave that 5 stars, but obviously if you don't, that is perfectly fine. Tell me how you feel about the show, I can improve it that way. Also, feel free to follow me on Twitter as well. That is @getinthemecha. I post all my updates on there on the show. So when the episodes go live, I say it as well. There'll be like a thumbnail or something like that. Also, just I give my opinions on anime things and comic book things. I've been recently doing a bit of a look on Sakuga. Nothing too extensive. I did like a Mob Psycho appreciation posts for you probably a few weeks back. It was a lot of fun. I'm also posting some other things elsewhere on other sites. Just, you know, becoming more involved when it comes to the anime community stuff. So yeah, check me out on Twitter if you want to get updates on those sort of things. And then finally, if you want to get these when they come out, subscribe to the show. So when you do want to listen to Again the Mecha on Fridays, it will be right there. Hopefully in the evenings. Okay, over here in the evenings. But hopefully you'll get them as soon as they do come out on your podcast app or wherever you do listen to podcasts. So that is the In The Moment segment for this week. Let's go to some closing thoughts. I'm going to try and keep this summary a bit brief for closing thoughts. I do like Attack on Titan 3rd Season Part 2. That is the short answer of it. I do enjoy this part of the show. I can't think of any major weaknesses of which it has. It's very good at bringing together past context and everything that's happened before it and implementing it within this arc and then kind of moving on after that while not sort of disregarding everything which happened, but moves on swiftly after that by the end to move on to the bigger and greater thing, which is the end game of the show. Also, this arc has a lot of layers to it. So, as I said, the temporal layer, the layer when it comes to tactics, the resource management, those things and dimensions are very much considered besides just the standard battle which takes place. You have to consider a lot of things when it comes to building this arc, which I'm very grateful for and I'm happy that Iyasama put together. This arc gives me the faith that I need going forward into the rest of Attack on Titan, and hopefully the final arc and the Marley arc in the adaptation of the final season of Attack on Titan is a good one as a result of the return to Shiganshina. Thank you for listening to this episode of Gen the Mecha. That has been episode 17. I'm really happy with how Attack on Titan has been going on the podcast so far. It's been getting a really nice response, which I'm happy about. Next time we do talk about Attack on Titan, we'll be working backwards actually. So we'll be looking at the Battle of the Tross District arc next time I talk about Shingeki, and then we'll be moving forward through the major arcs. So that will be Female Titan, Clash of the Titan, and Uprising. I was slowly getting a bit tired of the Return to Shiganshina arc, so hopefully that wasn't an overly waffly episode. But we definitely have rinsed it out to the core. I'm done with it now. We can talk about the other things. And hopefully, if I actually get a move on, I can move on to the final two arcs of the show so far. Obviously, the final arc isn't completed yet. But we can talk about the Marley arc if I actually get a move on with the manga. I'm kind of in the manga at the moment, not very far into the Marley arc, but I've read like a bit of it. So if I get a move on, then maybe we can discuss that after getting through the Uprising arc and everything like that. But that is going to do it for this episode. Thank you for listening. Have a lovely week, guys. Or whenever you're listening to this, have a lovely day, evening, night, morning, afternoon. And I will hopefully see you on the next one. Next episode will actually be the return of Tokyo Ghoul on the podcast, so we'll be discussing Tokyo Ghoul Re Part 2. I'm kind of excited, kind of dreading it at the same time, but it will hopefully be a good show for you to listen to. But honestly, thank you for listening. Hopefully I'll see you on the next one. But have a good one, guys. Never feel afraid to get in the mecha and try something new. I've been your host, Jamal, today. Goodbye. The music in this production goes as follows: Go Lucky by Chasers Gaming, Difference by Chasers Gaming, Chipscape by Chasers Gaming, Mandatory Overtime by Joth, and Anomaly by Eric Medeas under soundimage.org.